There's times when we come together in capacities like this that we talk about things, biblical things like salvation and worship and organization of the church and conduct of the life of a Christian. But there's also times when we need to examine some things of the world that is around us and questions that often come up concerning things that the world seems to have great difficulty in, that the world seems to be not sure, a little fuzzy of where God stands on certain subjects. And this morning I want to talk about one of those. I want to talk about capital punishment. It's a subject we do not talk about very much. It's something that we really talk privately among ourselves, and we all have people and friends who differ on this issue. But I want you to know that this is a subject that God has not been silent about. This is not something that God does not talk about in His Word. And so we want to ask three questions this morning. We want the first to ask, is it scriptural? Is capital punishment scriptural? And what I mean by that, is it authorized by God? Is it something that God is pleased with? Second of all, we want to ask the question, what should the Christian's attitude be towards it? What should be our disposition towards capital punishment? Is it just a political issue? Is it something that it really doesn't matter what we believe about it? And it really doesn't matter how we come out on it? Is it something that we're at liberty to differ on? And last, does being humane have any merit? We hear a lot about being humane. And now on this slide, you're going to see there's been a lot of ways that we have put people to death in our country. There was a time when we hung them. And that seemed to be barbaric and be very inhumane. I don't know how that was any more inhumane than getting your head chopped off by a guillotine. And the Mideast countries, they still practice that means of execution by cutting off your head. But then we've been more humane in our day and time, and we went from the electric chair to what we call a more humane way of putting people to death, and that is by an ejection gurney. We put them on there, we strap them down, we give them a sedative, and then we put poisonous liquids in their veins and drugs, and in a very quick period of time that their life is taken. And there are many, many people who are adamant that this is nothing more than murder, that this is taking the place of God, that this is acting in the position of taking upon ourselves to end a life. But what does the Bible say about that? What does God's Word say about this subject? I want to begin with this morning by pointing out something that many of you are familiar with, probably all of you. If you remember a few years ago, in 1992, I believe, in Oklahoma City, there was a bombing that took 168 lives by a young man named Timothy McVeigh. And that got the attention of the world at the time. And you know, he went through a lengthy trial. And it was very strung out and very long, but in the end, he was given the death penalty. And there was a lot of controversy about it, whether or not that was right, or whether he should have been given a life imprisonment, or whether it was humane to put him to death, even though he willfully and without any remorse took the account that he put those people to death, that he killed them by the bomb that he had made, and he had no remorse whatsoever about it. And then he went to his death, and he made a last statement. I want to share with you the words of Mr. McVeigh before he went to the death that was given by his peers. He said, "Out of the night that covers me, black as a pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods there may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of the chance of my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath, tears roam, but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds, and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll, I am the master of my soul." What that is a statement of no remorse. I did it. I'm proud of what I did. I did what I thought was necessary to wake these people up of the injustice that was being done in the land. And I have no remorse. And whatever my punishment is, whatever might lie ahead, I am unafraid. Because I'm the captain of my soul. Now, to many, that seems very arrogant in the face of certain death. But I want to suggest to you this morning it is not so arrogant. Because I don't believe that Mr. McVeigh is the only person that believes that he is the captain of his soul. And I don't believe he's the only one that thinks that there it doesn't matter because repercussions, that's only what some people think. But I want to show you that there are repercussions to sin. And God has stated in His Word that He has put some things in place to curb the act of sin. And we want to see what He says about that. Timothy McVeigh said that he was unbowed and unconquered. Nobody conquered him. Nobody made him bow down. Nobody had him submit to anything. But you know, in John chapter 8 and verse 34, Jesus disagreed. He says, He answered them and said, "Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin." Whether Mr. McVeigh ever knew it or not, he was a servant of sin. He was a servant of Satan. He chose to go down that path. He chose to submit to the ways of Satan, to submit to sin and to everything that it brings. He made that decision willfully. In many conversations with Mr. McVeigh, he took it upon himself. He understood what he was doing. He understood the devastation he would cause. He understood the innocent lives that he would take. And to him, that was his decision. And we might look at it as being totally unexplainable. We might look at it being totally horrible. But he did it with a good conscience. Just like Paul did in Acts chapter 23. When he persecuted the church and tried to destroy it. You may not understand the mindset, but understand nobody forced him to do it. The devil didn't force him to do it. Circumstances didn't force him to do it. He determined to do it on his own. He was a willful participant of sin. And so is every other person who commits it. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are the one slaves to whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? Ladies and gentlemen, it is a matter of choice. It is a matter of what decision I make in life. We can choose the path of sin. We can choose the path of evil. We can go down that path. But God says when you choose that path, there are consequences and repercussions that will come by those decisions. And God set in place some of these repercussions. In 2 Timothy 3 verse 13, "But evil men and apostles will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." Mr. McVeigh was deceived to think that there would be no consequences, that he was the captain of his soul. He determined where he would spend eternity. He determined what would be with his life. He determined what the end of it would be. He thought that. He thought that. "For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then each of us shall give an account of himself to God." Mr. McVeigh will stand before God in judgment, just like every other human being. And he will give an account of his decision, of his choices in life. And God will judge him according to those choices and according to the standards of His Word. And thus he will be judged. But you know the danger that happened to Mr. McVeigh can also happen to anyone who commits sin. And what can happen is it can harden your heart. What do I mean by that? I mean it hardens reality. You do not understand because your senses have been dulled that sin really is not that bad. That sin is really not that evil. That sin is not really that ugly. And that sin really in the long run doesn't matter. This is the message that the world is trying to get us to believe. And Satan is all very happy if men will accept that understanding. But listen to the Roman letter. In Romans chapter 2, listen to the words of Paul beginning in verse 1. Now you remember the Roman letter. He first wrote to the Gentiles how they had forgot God in their mind and how God turned them over to a reprobate mind to do those things that were not fitting. Why? Because they did not retain God and His knowledge. And I could just see the Jew. Yeah, give it to them. Yeah, they're not worth anything. They're opposed. But then God's servant turns his attitude towards the Jew. And he says, wait a minute. You're in the same condemnation that they are. Listen to what he says. Therefore, you are inexcusable, O man, whoever you are who judge for him. Whatever you judge another, you condemn yourself. For you who judge practice the same thing. But we know that the judgment of God is according to truth against those who practice such things. And do you think this, O man, you who judge those practicing such things and doing the same, that you will escape the judgment of God? Or do you despise the riches of His goodness, forbearance, long-suffering, and not knowing that the goodness of God leads you to repentance? But in accordance with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourselves in the day of wrath and a revelation of righteous judgment of God. I want you to notice the last part of that verse. Your hardness and impenitent heart. This is what sin does. Understand this, folks. Sin, it will harden and it will make one impenitent. What does that mean? That means unwilling to renounce sin. Unwilling to turn from it. Unwilling to accept its accountability. Unacceptable to accept their responsibility for committing it. God says sin will dull your senses that you don't care. That it doesn't matter. That happened to Mr. McVeigh. That happens to everyone who practices sin over a period of their life. But you remember what Mr. McVeigh said? He's the captain of his soul. Well, in some way, that's a true statement. But there's another way that it is not true. Then the dust shall return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Mr. McVeigh believed that he determined the destiny of his soul, and to some degree that is true. Because by the choices he made in life, he determined where that soul, that spiritual body, would be in eternity. But the one who determines that and makes that judgment is not man. Aren't you glad for that? Your brethren don't determine that. I don't determine that. Elders of the church don't determine that. Your friends don't determine that. The person that determines where you will spend eternity is God. Him and Him only. No one else. But you have a part in it. Because His determination is based upon your choices that you made in life. Good or bad. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will all those things be to which you have provided? If we put all our emphasis and all our feeling upon this world and everything we have and everything we possess, and that's where our focus is, that's where our faith is in, God says that's foolish, because in a moment you could be gone. And then what's going to happen to all those things? You're never going to know. You can't take them with you. And you're going to have to stand on your record. But I will show you to whom you should fear. Fear Him who can, after He has killed, has power to cast you into hell. Yes, I said you need to fear Him. Timothy McVeigh had more problems than fearing the American government. He's got to face God. Whatever man can do to you, he can take your life. He can make your life miserable. He can do something that would even take your life, but that's the least of your problem. Because someday, you're going to give an account to God. Understand this, ladies and gentlemen. We will give an account. We'll not get around this. We're going to give an account for the choice that we made in life. And no matter how society might have viewed our action, no matter what might seem popular and acceptable in the world, it won't change God's mind. You know, there's things in the world today that the world will accept. Don't you be fooled that you think God is. God has a standard that's above man's standard. God has a standard that's unchangeable. And He's going to judge by that standard, not by man. Not by His wisdom, not by His morals, nor by His thinking. But you know what's dangerous? The theories of man, they fail. They won't work. Truth is relative. Would make they's true action true for him? Yes. Did he believe his actions were justified? Read his memoirs. He believed everything he did was perpetrated against the government for the action of the government. Let me tell you, you know what that is? That's the old blame game. That's the same thing Adam did in the beginning. Remember when Adam and Eve were confronted with their sin? Remember, Adam, what are you doing? Who told you you were naked? Did you eat the tree that I told you not to eat? And you know, Adam said, yes, I did. I'm guilty. I'm sorry. No, he didn't do that, did he? It's that woman. That woman you gave me. She made me and I ate, and she's to blame. And you know, in essence, we think she was blaming Eve. Oh, she wasn't just blaming Eve. He was blaming God, who gave Eve to her. God did. Was God to blame for Adam's action? Adam's weakness? Adam's yielding to sin? No. And when Eve, it wasn't her fault. It's that serpent. You created that thing that goes around on its belly. It tempted me. It was his fault. But you go back to Genesis 3 and you read the punishment. And you know when God punished, you know who he punished? The man, the woman, and the serpent. And you know why he punished them? Because they were all three guilty by their own choice. Understand this. Men can mislead you. They can deceive you. They can lie to you. They can make your life miserable. But they cannot make you sin. You must choose to do that yourself. We should not judge. How many times have we been told this? How many times have you been quoted Matthew 7 verse 1 in your life? Judge not that you be not judged. People need to keep reading that verse. That's not the end of the thought. We're told that we can't judge. That we should not judge man's actions. Evil, good, or neutral, we should be by it. We should not have any part in it. We should just remain neutral. Wrong. What does God say? Judge not by appearance, but make righteous judgment. John 7 verse 24. What did Jesus say in the Great Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7:15? By a man's fruits ye shall know them. How would you ever know a false teacher if you didn't make a judgment? How would you ever determine something was wrong without making a judgment? How would you do that? No, we're not to make unrighteous judgment. We're not to make hypocritical judgment. And we are never to stand in the place of God. Do you remember Joseph? Remember Israel died? And now the brothers say, oh, now the father's gone. Now he's going to act in vengeance. Now he's going to get even for all the evil we did him. And they come to Joseph and they bow down. They prostrate before him and say, we're your servants. Do whatever you want to us. And you remember what Joseph said? He said, my brothers, am I in the place of God? You thought me to do evil, but God meant it for good. You know what Joseph was saying? It's not my position to judge you and what you did. God will take care of that. You know, I always try to remember this in my job as a preacher when I do a funeral. I'm not the judge. I don't determine where someone will spend eternity. All I do is tell the record of the person's life and tell what the standard is, and God will make the final judgment. You know what? I don't want that job, would you? Would you want to determine the destiny of every person in the world that's ever lived on the earth? I don't want that job. And I definitely don't want some of my brethren having that job. That job I will trust to God, because you know why? God will not make a mistake, because he will take everything into consideration. Barbaric practice. The Europeans say we are a barbaric country because we practice the death penalty. That we're barbaric in our actions and our conduct. That we still think we're living back in Neanderthal times. Is that true? Is the death penalty a barbaric thing? Is that barbaric for us to do that? And the last argument I've heard in the last 10 years is that capital punishment will not deter crime. Well, they better look at the statistics about that. Ask the Middle East about that. Ask the Middle East how much crime they have You're a thief and you steal something, they're going to cut off your feet. How are you going to steal something if you can't get to it? And when they take, when they punish somebody, they don't do it with a bag over his head and do it in a room where there's a few witnesses. They do it in an open square in the daytime. And anybody walking by can witness it. If you think you're thinking about a crime and you watch somebody get beheaded in the middle of the day, in the middle of the square, are you going to think about it before you try to do that same thing? But you know what? You know why I know that's not true? Because God said that it's not true. And let me show you what I mean. The capital punishment is not only authorized by God, it is commanded by God. I want us, before I begin, I want you to turn to Jeremiah chapter 8. Jeremiah chapter 8. Verse 9 says, "The wise men are ashamed, they are dismayed and taken. Behold, they have rejected the word of the Lord, so what wisdom do they have?" Well, let me ask the question. When a man rejects the wisdom of God, what wisdom does he have left? Our answer, none. You reject God's wisdom, you've rejected the greatest wisdom, the best wisdom, divine wisdom. Now, capital mind, it was commanded under the patriarchal law. Look at Genesis 9, verse 6. "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God, he made man." God said, you take a man's life, your life's going to be taken in its place. Why? Because God made man in his image. When you kill man, you have killed something God has created. It was also under the law of Moses. Look at Numbers chapter 15, verse 35, verse 36. "Then the Lord said to Moses, the man must surely be put to death. All the congregation will stone him with stones outside the camp. So as the Lord commanded Moses, all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him with stones until he is dead." And what reason did God give that for doing that? How many times in the Old Testament have we read this statement? "And put away the evil that is among you." What does he mean by that, ladies and gentlemen? Put away the evil that is among you. He means to not let that attitude spread. Not let that conduct spread. Let people understand if you do this action, there's going to be a swift repercussion. Understand that if you do this, God is not going to sit by lightly and not do anything about that. God says, you take a man's life, and your life's going to be taken. And notice he had the whole congregation doing it. Everyone was witness to it. To put away the evil that was among them. What about the case of Achan? You know, I've had people argue with me that this was inhumane. That God went over the line here. Did he? What happened to Achan? "Then it shall be that the one who has taken the accursed thing shall be burnt with fire." He had already had, because he has transgressed the covenant of the Lord and because he has done a disgraceful thing in Israel. Notice, transgressing the covenant, God said that's a disgraceful thing. You remember what Achan did? He went into Jericho after the battle, after they subdued the city, and he saw a Babylonian garment, he saw a shekel of gold, and he coveted it, and he took it, and he hid it in his tent. Nobody knew. Just a sin, that it was just his sin. But the next day, they were going into Ai. And they surveyed the land, and the spies came back and said, "Oh, it's just a little bitty old country. Just a little bitty town. You don't need to take all of us up there. You just take some of us." So Joshua sent 3,000, and they got routed. They not only got routed, but 36 men died. Their life was gone. Their life was over. And they come back, and they're crying. And Joshua tears his robe, falls on the ground, cries to the Lord, "What did you send us here for? Why have you not delivered us?" You remember what God told Joshua? He said, "Get up off the ground." He said, "I didn't leave you, you left me. There's sin in the camp. You deal with the sin. You get rid of the sin, and then I'll come back. You remember what God did? He had him bring all the tribes out, beginning with Judah. And Judah came out, and then Achan came before Joshua. And you remember what Joshua said to Achan? He said, "Son, don't lie to me. Confess to me what you've done." He said, "Well, I saw this garment, saw this shekel of gold, and I coveted it, and I hid it, and it's in my tent." So they went and they got the evidence. And you remember what God said to Joshua, told Achan? He says, you have troubled God, now God is going to trouble you. He brought out everybody in his family, brought out all the things he owned, brought out every possession he had, put it in a pit, they stoned him with stones until he was dead, and then they burned him with fire and put a heap of stones over them. People say, "Well, man, that was going overboard, was it? His action caused the death of 36 men because of greed. And he didn't steal from the Babylonians. He stole from God. Those things belonged to the Lord. They were his plunder. And he stole from God. And God said there is a repercussion of that." How long do you think it was that anybody wanted to steal anything again? If I put my hand to take something, I'm saying, "Oh, remember Achan. Put that down and leave it alone." It was to deter sin. That's why God did it. He did it to deter evil. It was also under the law of Moses. Fire went out from the Lord and he devoured them and they died before the Lord. You know who that was? That was Nadab and Abihu. Those were priests in their priestly garments, consecrated for the priesthood, offering service to God in the tabernacle, doing the things that God designated them to do. And you know what they did? They just did a little thing wrong. They got fire that God commanded not. And you know what God? God didn't wait till later. God devoured them on the spot. And you remember what God said? "Those that come and stand before me, they will be holy. They have to treat me as holy." You know what that means? That means that they must respect him and not obeying his law, not obeying the instructions he gave them. They were examples to the people. They were to be examples. They were to teach the law to the people. What did they teach by their example of supplementing what God said? That was sin, and God does not tolerate sin. "And the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died by the ark of God." Oh, you know what this was? The Philistines had taken the ark of God. And now, because they took the ark, God plagued them. Everywhere they took that ark in the land of the Philistines, they had problems. God plagued them. Many people died. Finally, they figured out, "We got to get rid of this ark. This ark's causing all this problem. Let's send it back to them. We don't want it anymore." And you remember, they sent it to Abinadab, and it was there for a long time because they looked in the ark, and they weren't supposed to look in the ark because they weren't Levites, and God caused many of them to die. And so they said, "What are we going to do with this? We don't want it either." But finally, they're going to bring it back. They're going to bring it back to Shiloh. And David puts it on a cart. And the oxen are going down the road. And it begins to stumble, hits a rut. And the ark begins to tell. How important was the ark of God to the Jews? How did they look at that ark? They took it into battle thinking if they had it, it would guarantee them victory. They had great respect for the ark of the covenant. He put his hand up to make sure it didn't fall off the cart. God struck him dead on the spot. You know why? He violated God's law. God's law said not anyone is to touch the furnishings of the ark. And you know, God made a provision that went after. You remember those rings that were in the four corners of the ark? Had staves go through them, they carried them on their shoulders. Why? Nobody had to touch it. They violated the law. There's a penalty. God took their life. Now, I want somebody to say, God's inhumane. But you know, there's people in the world that would say he was. In our country, he would be considered inhumane. Do you understand by our liberal thinking in our country, the God of heaven would be looked at as being inhumane and barbaric? I'm not taking any part of that argument. What about under the law of Christ? Well, we've grown beyond that. We're not barbaric anymore, really. You remember Ananias and Sapphira? They lied. They lied to the Holy Spirit. They had some land, they sold it, and they gave the money to the apostles to help needy brethren, but they acted like they gave the whole amount, and they didn't. They only gave part of it. And by the way, they didn't have to give all of it. They only had to give part of it. But you remember what God said? Listen to what Peter said. While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not your own? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but you've lied to God. Then Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. So great fear, notice that, so great fear came upon all those who heard these things. You know, his wife came in a little while later, about 3 hours later, came in and said the same stories. And Peter said, the men that carried your husband out are going to carry you out. And you know what verse 11 says? And great fear came upon the whole church. You think you'd lie to God? If you just saw Ananias and Sapphira die because they lied to God, because they misrepresented what they do, would you be quick to lie? Would you be quick to lie again? I don't think so. I don't think so. Now the bigger question is it authorized by God today? We've looked at the patriarchal law, the Mosaic law, the law of Christ. Okay, Keith, what about today? Is it authorized? Romans chapter 13. Open your Bibles. Romans chapter 13. Let's read some passages together. Chapter 13, I'll begin reading in verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. In verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, he be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on those who practice evil. What's he saying? God put the authorities in power. They are there because God ordained them. What were the authorities put there to do? They weren't put there for the person who does good. They were put there for the person that violates and does evil. But he says, if you don't want to be fearful, how can you not be fearful of the law? Do what is in accordance with the law. But if you violate the law, then you need to be afraid. Because he is an avenger for God. And he does not carry the sword in vain. Now, brethren, when he talks about the sword in vain, he's not talking about a slap on the wrist. He said, well, that's your interpretation, is it? Let me tell you what Paul thought he said. Acts 25. Remember when he stood before Felix and Festus and Agrippa? He's on trial for his life, and all he's done is remain faithful to God. What was his attitude? Look at what he said. For if I am an offender, or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. For if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. You know what Paul said? If I'm worthy of death, if I've violated the law, if I've done something that's against the law, and it's the death penalty, you put me to death. Did he think it was barbaric? Did he think it was unfair? This is an apostle of Christ. This is an apostle. This is an inspired writer. He said, if I'm guilty of the death penalty, you put me to death. He didn't think it was a violation of God's law. What about the cross? What does the cross teach us about this? What does the cross teach us about the death penalty? To many, it's a symbol of love. But is that the only symbol it is? For when we were still without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely of the righteous man will one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love towards us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Yes, it's a symbol of love, but it's also a symbol of God's hatred for sin. You know why Jesus was on that cross? You know why He suffered? You know why He had anguish? And you know why He died in a so agonizing, terrible death? He died because I want to sin. Because I've sinned in my life. Because you've sinned in your life. And He willingly went to the cross knowing that He was worthy of death because He paid the price for sin. It took the death of Christ to pay for sin. Was that barbaric to God? No, it wasn't barbaric to God. God required it. It took the death of an innocent man, the blood of a just man, to pay for sin. Was it barbaric? Jesus died for us. He took our place. And we should have been where He was at. And it would have been a justifiable thing. It would have been a just thing had you and I been there in place of Him. Why? We are guilty of sin. Romans 6:23. And wages of sin according to Romans 6 is death. We deserve death because we sinned. It's not just a symbol of love. Cruel punishment? You think on a gurney is cruel punishment? You think putting drugs in your veins and putting you to death within 2 minutes, you think that's cruel punishment? Did you forget about the cross? For Christ also suffered once for the sins, the just for the unjust, that He might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit. The guillotine isn't inhumane. Hanging is not inhumane. The electric chair wasn't inhumane. Nor is being put on a gurney inhumane. But what about the cross? Having your hands and feet nailed to a cross. Pushing you up. Making you suffocate. Making you drown in your own phlegm that's in your body that you can't get out. And the most difficult thing to do would be to breathe. And to breathe, He would have to pull Himself up on the cross. And the most difficult thing to do on the cross would be to speak. He spoke 7 times. He was scourged. We thought, you know, remember when that kid got caned in Singapore? We thought, oh, it was a terrible thing. Jesus was not caned. He was scourged. And you know what they did that for? For criminals. In the Roman system, that was the death of a criminal. Criminal was worthy of that kind of action. Don't tell me about cruel methods. You know what bothers me in our country? We think it's cruel what we do to the man or the woman who committed the crime, but what about what that person did to his victim? Do they not have any rights? Their blood cries from the ground, just like Abel's did. You remember when God came to Cain, He said, where's your brother? He says, oh, well, I don't know where he's at. Am I my brother's keeper? You remember what the Lord said? Your brother's blood cries from the ground. In our society, we've got it mixed up. We've got the compassion, and we've got the mercy on the side of the one who committed the crime. And the victim is left without a defense. God says that if you take man's life, then your blood should be shed. Does God authorize the death penalty? Is it scriptural? Absolutely so. You know what God forbid? Murder. What's murder? That's the innocent, premeditating taking of life. You know what bothers me? We'll call capital punishment cruel and inhumane. But killing a baby in the womb, that's not. We've got our value system all mixed up. God says life is precious no matter where it exists. Whether it's in the womb, whether it's on this earth, man's life is precious. And when you take man's life, there's, God says, there is a consequence. Now, we could talk a great deal about making mistaken judgment, of not looking at all the evidence, and I'm not advocating that. I'm not advocating putting innocent people to death. But when a man or a woman sat his day in court, and all the evidence point that they're guilty, and they've been judged by their peers, and the law of the land says that you deserve death and you have been sentenced to death, it is authorized by God and it should be completed to deter men and women from committing acts against other men and women. God employed it. Would you charge God with sin? Wonder what my friends in the liberal media would do. I wonder what the liberal thinking people in this country would do. Would they charge the God of heaven with sin? Would they charge him with being barbaric? Would they charge him with being unmerciful, of lacking compassion? Would they charge him with that? They would have to be consistent. Well, I'm telling you, there's nobody that's more just, no one that's more just, more merciful, more compassionate, and more loving than the God whom I serve. And the God whom I serve, who has all those capacities, also said if you take a man's life, then death is what you deserve. What should be my attitude towards it? I endorse it. I endorse it and I would promote it to be just. I believe a man or woman should get a fair trial. All the evidence should be examined. If anybody gets the death penalty, it should be appealed. And they should be able to go back and look at all the evidence again. But when it's been determined beyond any shadow of a doubt, a person is guilty of a crime, they're taking the life of another person, the death penalty isn't inhumane, it is just. And God will, you know what? God's not going to condemn it for capital punishment, but He will for abortion. We better not be worried about the capital punishment, we better be worried about the other thing. Because you remember what the definition of murder, you remember what the definition of that is? The innocent, premeditated taking of life. Now you tell me what abortion is if it's not that. Being humane, that's not the issue. The issue is, does God authorize capital punishment? The answer to that's yes. Now you know what? I know that's not politically correct. And there is a bill before Congress right now to make the Bible a hate book because it proclamates such things. Because it says such things in such plain language. When it condemns homosexuality, when it condemns abortion, when it condemns ungodly living, and that's a hate book, you're taking away people's rights. You're putting them on a position. You're making fun of them. You're belittling them. You're humiliating them. That is baloney. I was asked about a year ago, well, what if they do make the Bible a hate book? I could quit preaching lessons like this. I could quit preaching about abortion, about homosexuality. No. Doesn't have to put me in jail. But you know what? Don't pat me on the back for that. If I'm going to be a servant of God and I'm going to preach the whole counsel of God, something that Brother Smith mentioned this morning in lesson, if you're going to preach the whole counsel of God, you've got to preach it. And the Bible says you do when it's in season, out of season. You know, for so long, we could preach that and we didn't have any fear from outside. Those days may be coming to an end, folks. And you know one of the reasons? It's because we have sat silently by and we've let the minority's voice be heard louder than ours. We need to wake up. We need to understand that God's ways are the only ways at work. When will man learn the truth of Isaiah 55? My ways are not your ways. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts, and my ways are more noble than your ways. I don't believe in the death penalty because it's something that's against popular thinking. I believe in the death penalty because I believe the Bible authorizes it by God. In every dispensation that we can read about in the Bible, God enacting it, and I see no scripture that would condemn it. If you disagree with that, I'd love to see the scripture. that condemned the practice of capital punishment. Thank you for your kind attention. I'm keeping you longer than I wanted to. I thank you for your attention. As we said in the beginning of this sermon, that we don't want to close this time without giving you an opportunity to render obedience to the gospel. If you're here and you're not a Christian, if you are and you've wandered away back in the path of sin, we want to give you an opportunity to make your life right this very hour. If we can help you in any way, we bid you come forward. Ask you that we stand and sing.